Blog Talk Radio.
Just open your mouth and just begin to whisper something to him. Tell him how much you love him. Come on, tell him, tell him, tell him. Come on, you tell him. I want to hear you tell him. Oh God, if you don't ever do anything else, you've already done enough. You've done so much for me until I'm behind in my worship. That if you stopped moving in my life right now, it would take me 1,000 years to give you all the praise that's due your name. My God. And so today, I want to take this moment. Lord, we give you all our praise. It's the praise that's due you. And we magnify you when we say that you're holy. That's how we magnify you. When we call you holy. Tell you that we worship you. Does anybody feel like that tonight? Anybody in here feel like that tonight? Lord, we give you all the praise. Because that's the praise that's due your name. And the only way you can really magnify it. It's telling that he's holy. Why do you say holy? Because when you cry holy, no demon can stand in your presence. When you tell him how holy he is, every shackle has to break off of your life. Every spirit of torment has to come off of your mind. We worship you, Almighty One. Just open up your mouth and just begin to worship him. You ain't got to sing the song. Just begin to tell us how wonderful he is. How glorious he is. Almighty One. Yes.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Victory Against All Odds on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Evangelist Benton. Please call someone, text someone, and let them know we are on the air live. Today is Monday, February the 20th, 2012. The chat room is open for comments, questions. Please feel free to respond at will. For my first-time listeners, Victory Against All Odds is a radio talk show for the family where we talk about some of the struggles that families face as it relates to issues of child abuse, depression, domestic violence, substance abuse, suicide, and sexual abuse. This also leads to discussions that may come up as a result of the residue from these issues of life. So, let's talk. Please grab pen and paper so you can write down important information. My email address is odds_against_U@yahoo.com. Again, that's odds, O, D as in dog, D as in dog, the letter S, against, AGAINST, _U@yahoo.com. You may email me, and please, on the subject line, simply put VAAO, standing for Victory Against All Odds, in the subject area. You may also leave a message on my confidential voicemail box at 641-715-3900. That's 641-715-3900. Access code is 343-658-POUND. That's 343-658-POUND. You may leave a extensive message up to an hour, and if you need to leave a message longer than that, just simply hang up, call back, and you may continue where you left off. And lastly, you may visit the website at www.oddsagainstyou@webs.com. Again, that's www.oddsagainstyou@webs.com. And simply go to the contact us tab and leave your comment, concern, and I will respond accordingly. Again, I thank you for stopping by and taking time out of your schedule to join me on this evening. On last week, we had our first funeral of dead things. What a powerful release of dead weight and ridding those things that had control over our lives. I certainly thank each and one of you who participated and for the speaker, Apostle Shirley Robertson, who delivered a powerful eulogy that certainly blessed us all. We will have another funeral service in the future. As I mentioned, healing is a continuum. It is a process that is continuous. Today, I want to introduce to you my special guest, Teresa, who actually contacted me wanting to share her story. Teresa is the middle child of three. At an early age, she lost her father. How many of you know or have experienced the death of a father at an early age? We know this can certainly be devastating to a young girl because we know that daddies are the apples of our eyes. And I say we because I also had that same experience. But for Teresa, losing was just the beginning of a long road that she did not know she was going to travel. And it set the pattern for the rest of her life. I welcome Teresa. Teresa, you are on the air.
Hi, nice to be here with you.
Thank you, and welcome to Victory Against All Odds.
You're welcome.
Teresa, I had the opportunity to read a bit about your life and the interesting statement that I had come across that was after losing your father, losing became a pattern of life for you. How old were you when your father passed? And if you're able to describe the relationship that you had until that time.
Okay, I was actually 3 when my father was run over in a road in a car accident and was killed outright there and then. It's a bit of a strange one for me because I really couldn't remember him that well because I was so young. So my real memories of him are things that have been told to me by my mother since his passing. And sadly, I guess that was a big loss for me back then, but I didn't sort of know the man he was. When I grew up and could understand the type of person he was and the way he was with my mother, it transcended that he was actually a violent husband and somebody that really didn't sort of care very much for his family. But I guess at 3 years of age, I didn't have that memory. So, you know, you remember things. I just remembered I'd lost my dad, you know, until many years later when it was explained to me what had actually happened. And I suppose that explanation was the start of the things I was going to lose for the rest of my life because I also lost that memory that I held dear about him as a man and a person and a husband and a father.
Wow. That's quite early, and I can understand you not remembering much at that early age, certainly. Let's talk a little bit about the period of the staying with your grandparents before your mother remarried. Briefly, what was the relationship like with your mother, your siblings, and your grandparents? And did you feel safe and did you feel loved?
Absolutely. That was a sort of a transition period for me. As I said, when my father was killed, my mother moved 200 miles back to her parents' hometown. She worked 4 jobs to keep us because she had 3 children, you know, and that was her main priority. My grandparents would watch us during the times where she couldn't be with us, and I suppose from the age of 3 until 7 before she met my stepfather, those years of were very precious to me. They are the one thing, but the one time in my life that I can actually say I hold dear because my grandparents were very loving. They sort of were very family orientated. There was a lot of love in the house and a lot of faith, you know, and that sort of thing in Jesus. And they were just, you know, exceptional people. So those periods of years, you know, other than knowing that my mother had to work so many long hours to sort of make sure we were fed and cared for, other than that, that, you know, they are the years I remember as being blessed.
It sounds like you do know what love feels like and what it is to be, what it is to be loved, has what I would consider to be a provider, one with love and feeling. I guess that feeling of being safe is what I gather. So I hear that you at least had that experience. Now, shifting what happened after the marriage of your stepfather, what happened after the marriage of your stepfather, and how long was it before you detected something was wrong?
This is a very strange question. Well, it's not a strange question. The answer may sound very strange to your listeners and to yourself. My mother remarried when I was 7 and we moved to her new husband's hometown again, which is about 300 miles away from my grandparents' home. The abuse started not very soon, you know, very soon after that, but it was a suppressed memory. So it was something I never remembered until I was an adult when I was married as a child of my own in my own home. And my stepfather encroached on my life once more with blackmail and things, threats to hurt the people I cared about to actually make me bend to his will. That continued for a period of 5 years before I actually came to a point in my life where I was so far down and so low that I actually tried to take my own life, which I'll say right here and now, I woke up the next morning and I knew that was the wrong thing to do, and it was the day I decided to take back my life, which is a different question, I guess. But after this period of my saying, you know, I can't take this anymore, whatever happens, happens, I had a period of time where I've had letters through the door, daily 10 letters. One day would say he loved me immensely and feelings of, you know, emotion. The next day it could be letters how much he hated me, you know, sort of terrible things written to myself. But there was always one reoccurring sentence in there which he would say, you'll always be my little brown girl. And I knew it meant something to me, but I didn't know why. And it wasn't until a period of a few months that I actually stood there with it in my hand one day reading the letter, and the memories that were suppressed came flashing back into my head. It was like the lid falling off Pandora's box, I guess, the little boy taking his finger out the dam. I didn't remember anything. There were suppressed memories for when I was a child, and it felt like a forever moment standing there with them all flooding back to me, but it was obviously not that long. But they were alien thoughts to me at that time, you know. They were memories I didn't want to actually claim or didn't even think were my own. So I have probably 99% recollection now. This sort of, we're talking like sort of 10 years on. But yeah, so the abuse started that young, but for me, I wasn't aware of, because my mind closed down and it was a trigger point.
Hello? Uh-oh, I think I lost my caller. Hopefully she will. Well, she's still up here, so I don't know why I don't hear her anymore. She dropped the call. We'll just kind of wait for her to call me back in. But if you're listening, she's talking about feelings. And one of the things about feelings is we have the ability to shut our feelings down when we are in a situation where we're being hurt. One thing about feelings is a package deal. And when you talk about a package deal, we're talking about feelings at all times. We all have feelings. Whether we recognize the feelings or not, or whether we are aware of them or not, they're always there. Funny thing about feelings, they tend to show up and respond to the right now happenings in our life. So when we experience loss or sadness, grief shows up. These are just their feelings, such as when we're injured, hurt, and anger shows up. So what I'm hearing, and I think my caller is back on the air now, is that she suppressed her feelings in order to survive. And these are some of the coping skills that we talked about earlier in the shows, and you are always, always welcome to go back and listen to those. Teresa, do I have you back on the air?
You do. I don't know what happened there. I had just an engaged tone in my ear.
Say that one more time.
Sorry, I said, yeah, I'm back. I could just, you know, there was no line there for me. I couldn't hear what you were saying.
Oh, okay. I was just kind of filling in. You were talking about suppressing your feelings, and so I was just giving the listening audience how that works as we talk about feelings and what we do as a coping mechanism. I've been telling my listeners and giving them clues of how we survive our childhood trauma. And what we do to cope, and one of the things we talked about is being able to suppress our feelings in order to survive, to keep our mind, you know, to keep us sane and things of that nature. So you were talking about, I think you said you were talking about reference to being the age of 10 and just really just kind of coming into the memories of you know, what has happened to you. And I guess what I'm trying to pull out here is what kind of abuse would occur, even though you didn't remember then, what kind of abuse occurred? What was that like for you? You know, what what did you, when did you detect that something was wrong, and what was that abuse that took place that caused you to take your feelings and just do whatever you needed to do to survive? What was that, and how long did that go on?
As I said, you know, as a child, there were suppressed memories, and I guess that went on till I was around 14. And my stepfather said to me one day, you know, I had to live in his house. I had to live within his rules, and I decided that those rules I could no longer live under. So I actually went away from home and sort of escaped that scenario. But it's very difficult to try and explain my scenario, really, because I didn't actually have this recurring reference. I know what happened to me as a child until I was 35, and that was when I had to actually cope with those childhood memories, because they were suppressed. So I not only had what was going on around me at that present moment in time, what my stepfather was actually doing around me at that time to me and the people that I cared about and loved, but I was also trying to cope with the memories, childhood memories of abuse that were not known to me in my subconscious. So it was just like, it's really hard to explain, but it was like an overfill of emotion, because you weren't just trying to deal with that moment in time or your reference of your life at that time. You're trying to deal with memories that were, you know, you didn't know your own, that were alien, that you couldn't sort of put in any box, or you had to try and deal with as an adult. And I suppose we all have that child within us that we have, if we're 7 or 70, that was very traumatized and very damaged by what happened as a child. And I don't know really, if I say to your listeners, whether memory or keeping that memory as I went through sort of into my adulthood would have been a better way of actually dealing with it, other than getting, you know, everything there at once within a situation that I was also dealing with that was very traumatic and very scary. So I don't really know. Maybe mine was a different scenario, because, you know, sometimes people suppress and there's a trigger point, and that's actually what I did. My child within me couldn't deal what was going on, so it was suppressed. So it's, you know, some people go through the abuse as a child and they remember everything. They know what has happened, but mine was a very different instance, so it's a little bit different for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, suppression is one of the tools that we use to survive, to suppress those memories and block them and put them, if I say put them on the shelf, and in order to just kind of keep us going and keep us functioning until we can, as I say, do better. I remember having to do that myself at times, and then, you know, it wasn't until I was, you know, just about an adult before I began to actually deal with some of the trauma and some of the abuse that was taking place. One of the things that I also was reading was that you talk about a Pandora's box for you, and that was opened. And I guess the question is, you know, what Pandora box was open, and were you able to close that lid? If you are willing to talk about that. And you also talk about the psychological and the sociological residue. What scars are you battling, and what victories did you conquer in all of that?
Today, sitting here talking to you, I've conquered everything. You know, I'm in a place now of relative peace. I've dealt with all my memories and all my, you know, issues and things that I remember that have hurt me. The writing of my book actually did that for me, which was, Pandora's box lid fell off. I know I couldn't close or put it back on for an awful long time. But by the time I got to a place where I could put it back on, I didn't no longer have to, because I was in a place, on a position where I could deal with what was going on with me. You know, it was for me, it took an awful long time to find somebody within the mental health care that I could relate to, and that's a really big word, you know, because throughout life we meet people in all walks of life that we can either relate to or we can't. You know, that happens just if you walk into a room and meet a group of people you've never met before. And it's no different, I suppose, than if you go into mental health care to find somebody that works for you, that you can relate to and that you can open up to. And there's that one-to-one feeling that you both feel comfortable in what you want to say and what you need to explore. This took many years for me, but I eventually found a psychiatrist that actually this did happen to. And this was actually, I suppose, the birth of my book, because it was a case of when we couldn't be in session together, she said to me, you know, if you can't talk to me on the telephone, if I'm unavailable, then why don't you just write down how you feel, and the next time we meet, we can talk about everything surrounding those issues. It started that way. It was random sentences, really. They weren't paragraphs. They weren't, you know, joined together. They didn't mean an awful lot or make an awful lot of sense, but they were just me venting, as it was. I did this for a few weeks, and then I realized that I was actually making the sentences run from one to the other. Then I was paragraphing, and suddenly I knew I was writing a book. And I knew at that point in time that therapeutically it was healing me. It was very painful. It was me facing memories, because it was a bit like looking back into the, you know, the lion's den, really. But I knew that if I could get it all on paper, I could vent all of my feelings. I could put a full stop on what had happened to me. So it was a case of I just, you know, pressed delete on the computer and sat there and thought, I'm going to write this for me because I need to do it. I need to have my healing journey. And I know there's so many other people out there through my time within mental health care before that point that I knew needed that word too, needed the reason to know that if I could come through all this and I'm still here writing about it, so can they. So it was a two-stroke thing, really, my recovery, my therapeutic way of healing, and also, as just as importantly, to tell others that, you know, you can come through, this is what happened, just come, you know, take the journey with me and you'll come to your end.
That is awesome. And I think what I'm tickled about is some of the tools that I have given my listening audience. One of the tools that you just mentioned was writing things down, journaling. It helps get things out. I talked about turning what we consider to be such a negative thing, which is anger, into a positive thing. And I have given them tools in reference to how to take anger and make it positive. And one of the things that I have given them was to write things down, along with a couple of other things, such as running, finding a friend to call and talk to. And one of the other things that you also talked about, which is another tool, was finding your support system, whether that be in the community, whether that be a family friend, a coworker, you know, a sibling, whatever that thing is. So it sounds like what I'm hearing is that, you know, found that support system, because that was actually one of my questions, which was, you know, what support, what resources did you use to help you in your healing process? And what are your plans in that continued healing? Because we know that healing is a continuum. It is a process that's forever going on. But it sounds like you've already answered that question in reference to your resources, as well as being able to write things down. And so let me make sure I understand you. So Pandora Box is the title of your book?
No, it's called There's a Fine Line. And I'm asked many times why I chose that, and I never actually knew until I finished the book what it would be called. And for me, it was a statement rather than as much as a title, because there was a thin line between sanity and insanity, and it was walked on two sides. One side on myself, the other side was my stepfather, and he'd crossed over that line to insanity, and I was still trying. I was still sort of in there fighting to stay on the sane side. But I know that I was very, very close to sort of stepping over to his side of the line. So that was the name of the book. It meant something to me. And I, as I said, that was chosen after I finished the book. So There's a Fine Line, the name of the book. And, you know, it's one I walked, if that makes sense to you.
Yes. Yes, it does. Much, much sense. Makes much sense to me. Now, that book is not finished, or it is?
It's absolutely finished, yes. The e-book was came out in February 2011, and the paperback is available since June 2011. So, yeah, it's both available. I have my own website, which is really easy to remember. It's teresajoyce.com, which is obviously www.teresajoyce.com, and I will actually spell that because some people get that wrong there. So it's teresajoyce.com. I write articles on my website, which are totally separate from my book. They're just my coping mechanisms for people who are going through traumatic experience. There is also an icon on my homepage, which you can click, that says buy, There's a Fine Line, and that takes you straight to amazon.com, which is the best sort of cost-wise place to find my book. But my main issue is not about selling my book. Of course, I would like to sell my book because I know it will help people. But my blog and the things I write on there are totally free, and you can go there and, you know, just listen to or read the articles, get back to me at any point you want to, and like yourself, I will answer. My email address is quite easy too. It's teresajoyce.joyce@gmail.com. I always answer every email that's sent to me, even if it takes me a few days.
That is awesome, and I am absolutely delighted to hear that you are walking in victory. And again, the website is www.teresajoyce.com. That's www.teresajoyce.com. And you may go to her website and you may check out her story as well as get in contact with her and also her book. I have some listeners, and I don't know if they have questions for you, but do you mind answering questions or listening to comments as they have listened to your story?
Absolutely not. You can ask me anything. I say this to all my hosts. I will answer any question there is. There isn't any uncomfortable question for me because they're all about helping others, you know, understand. So you can ask me anything you want. So can your listeners.
Thank you. Some may have just a comment. Some have just occurred to me. Whereas I have a couple of my faithful followers who I see here in the queue. If you do not have anything to say, just let me know. And if you want to just continue to listen, that's fine. I'm calling out your last four digits of your phone number. Caller 3991, you're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for my guest?
Hello?
Yes. Hi, you're live on the air, Victory Against All Odds. Do you have a question or comment for my guest?
How did she, I don't know if she covered this or not, but I just wanted to know how does she begin to cope? What mechanisms did she use as effective coping when she began to deal with her trauma? How did she eventually heal? What did she use? What techniques did she use to heal? That's what I wanted to know.
Okay, do you want me to answer? Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It was a case that I went down so low, there was nowhere else to go, to be honest with you. It was that date and time that I spoke of a while back now, saying when I tried to take my own life, and I woke up in the hospital the next day and realized what a big mistake that had been, and I knew that I had to fight back because, you know, I was going to lose everything and everyone that meant anything to me, my son, my family members around me, and I guess I sat in the hospital that day and thought, this is the day I'm going to take back my life. And, you know, I say to people all the time that talk to me, you will know there is a point where you get where you know that there, you know, you have to either take back your life or you lose it. And I guess that's a big choice we all make. But we all have that strength within us to say you don't own us anymore. You know, your abuser still owns you unless you take back your life. And I always say to everyone I talk to, forgiving is not forgetting. You never forget what happened, but you learn to forgive, and that's the big mechanism for me that worked. I had to learn to forgive because I was dragging the trauma along with me by the scruff of the neck because I wouldn't put it down. This is, you know, this is years on, you know, 10 years on, and I was still, it was still affecting me. So forgiveness, that was the main thing. I had to learn to forgive me for the involvement I felt I had. Obviously, I was a child, but you still believe you have. And then you have to forgive your abuser. Once you do that, you have all the tools you need to heal.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Where is that? I'm going to whoop your butt if you don't put it up here.
Hi, are we still here?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm done with my question. That's all I had.
Okay.
I am sorry. My phone cut off. You can continue. No, it's my caller. I don't know if
yes.
You all got cut off and was unable to hear the rest of the response.
Hi.
I heard her. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, caller 3991. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Caller 8180, you are live on the air Victory Against All Odds. Do you have a question or comment for my guest?
No, not yet. I'm just sitting here listening.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Caller 4029, you are live on the air. Do you have a question or comment for my guest? Alrighty. That is all I have at the moment. And we thank you, Teresa, for joining us on the show. And is there anything that we can do to assist you? Please don't hesitate to call us or to email me or call my confidential voicemail box. Is there anything that you would like to leave with the listening audience? Any final remarks or statement?
Okay, yeah, final remarks or statement. I guess I covered that on my last question with that lady who called in. It's all about forgiveness. You know, we have to learn to forgive those that, you know, hurt us, that, you know, abuse us, that do things to us in life that may take us many, many years to heal. But, you know, you have to remember, you're doing it for you. You're not doing it for them. You forgive them because it allows you to let go. It gives you your freedom. It allows you to move on with your life and close that chapter and walk into another one that is all about promise. You know, you need to leave the bad behind. And it's never for them. It's for you. Always remember, forgiveness is not forgetting. You need to move on with your life because that's your path you're meant to walk. And there's a better path out there for you. Leave the path where it belongs.
Exactly. I always say at the end of my show, the most powerful weapon you can have in terms of taking back control is to forgive. Because when you forgive, you take the power back and you keep the power. It empowers you when you can forgive those who have wronged you. And like you said, forgiving is all about you, not necessarily about them. Even if they don't necessarily ask for forgiveness, the fact that you forgive gives you strength, and somehow or another it gives you power, and it releases you from the mindset of being bound. It gives you a freedom to be able to just, you know, exhale, if you will. And one of the things that I appreciate about what I've heard is, you know, you were able to write down your feelings. And one of the things I heard earlier, we were talking about in terms of feelings, is feelings is a package thing, and feelings come in a spectrum. And when we do decide to open up that venue, we have to deal with all the feelings, not just one. And even though in your earlier life you may have shut things down and turned those feelings off, which was actually a question that I had for my listeners, and that is what happens, you know, to those natural responses when they've been interrupted. And this is a thought I'm leaving for my listeners. What happens to those natural responses when they're interrupted by trauma, you know, the trauma of child abuse, sexual abuse, domestic violence, and sexual abuse? What happens to those natural responses? Do they remain? Do they shift? Do they die? Do they disappear? And certainly for each individual, that response, that answer to that response is going to be different based on your situation. So there's not necessarily a right answer or a wrong one. It is an individual answer, but there at the same time, there is a pattern that seems to take place. I can share this much with you. I did have to do the same thing, and I did have go down that path of wanting to take my life. And I think one of the questions that I have for you is, what changed your mind when you hit that road of suicide and you were thinking, you know, did you plot, did you plan? And when you got to the last of it, what was that one thing that changed your mind that said, okay, I can't do this? What was that?
It was my grandson. You know, he was about 6 months old at that time, and I woke up that day in hospital, and I thought to myself, you know, I could miss this life, this absolute gift to me. You know, he didn't know me, didn't judge me, he didn't know my past, didn't know what happened to me. It was pure love. I was his nanny, and my son brought him in to see me, and he put his little hand in mine, and I looked down at him, and I thought, you could have missed this miracle of life because you could have taken you away from him and him away from you by your own actions. I mean, my abuser never even knew I'd forgiven him. He's not even been in the same country as me for the last 15 years. So at the end of the day, forgiveness is not about him or forgiving him. He was never aware of my journey and my act of being able to forgive him. But every day now I look at my grandson and I say, you know, I could have missed his miracle of life. And your listeners need to know that you could be on the darkest road, you know, walking down the path that seems as though you're walking into the mouth of hell. But there is another day, there's tomorrow, and you have to just believe and keep going and keep moving forward. Take back your life, because you don't know what's in your future. You know what's in your past. You can't change that. You need to just leave it behind you. But if you take your own life, if you choose that way out, as I tried to do, which I say, well, I would never repeat that performance ever again. I could have missed a miracle that I see every time he looks at me and smiles at me. And every time I, you know, pick up the phone and I hear his voice and the joyful things that he brings into my life. And, you know, that's extended, you know, with other things going on around him and around me. So all I'm saying is there is a better place. There is you know, you can arrive at a better place. There's only one way to go when you're so low and that's up. And as long as you dig deep, believe in yourself, forgive yourself, move on and, you know that the power is within you. It is within you. Your soul is just there waiting to fly again. You just need to give it wings.
Yes. Yes, I like that. Exactly. You just definitely have to give it wings, you know, because when you've hit the very bottom, there's only one way, and that's up. And I thank you for the courage and the strength to do just that, you know, that it took the smallest thing, you know, the life of another grandchild that gave you that strength to be able to pull yourself up. And as I'm talking, it has occurred to me that one of the questions that I neglected to ask you, because I did hear you say that you went on to get married, and I'm wondering, did you get married to kind of escape, you know, did you get married to escape what was going on in the household? Was your husband understanding, or exactly what is the status? You know, are you still married, or, you know, I think I read that did not last. Do you mind sharing? I still have some time. Do you mind sharing that path?
No, absolutely not. I'm no longer married. I've been divorced now since 1997. My husband was well aware of what was going on with my stepfather, and he wasn't supportive. He worked for him, and it became a place where he felt the business was in trouble. So in his mind, I had to sort of just put up with or stump up with what was going on to save the business, which obviously made my marriage unworkable. So I walked away from that marriage. I didn't get married to leave the home. I left, as I said, I left when I was 14. I joined the Royal Air Force just before I was 16 years of age, and I didn't sort of come back to the city that we were all living in until I was sort of 21, when I met my husband and we married. And then I was obviously not living in my mother's home with my stepfather because we had our own. I never actually went back to that household. So was my husband supportive? No, he wasn't. Did he understand? I guess he didn't either. But, you know, it's not about that. It's about you knowing that what is right and wrong. It's about you knowing the truth. And it's about you taking back your life, you know. And please leave all your listeners, especially that lady who was listening and didn't want to speak, can you please give out my email address? Because I would like anyone who's listening, either this on a podcast, to email me directly. If they can't talk on the show, please email me. I will return your call.
Yes. And actually, I think there's another part to this story that you have not said yet that person might need to hear. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, go on. You asked me the question. I'm happy.
So in terms of, so what is the status in terms of a relationship now?
Are we talking about my sexuality? Yeah. You're fine to ask me. There's nothing I won't answer. After I left my marriage, I had a school friend. I've known her since we were both 11 when we met. We were both at school together. And she knew what was going on with my stepfather, and she was my confidant, apart from my own doctor, who was the only one that was there, really. And that we formed a bond, I suppose, that went past just friendship, and she told me one day that she'd been in love with me for many years, how she felt about me. It was an emotion for me that I didn't quite understand, but at that moment in time, I sort of understood her. I knew where I was in frames of my time frame and how I felt about things around me. The three male main figures of my life, I guess, which my father, my stepfather, and my husband, sort of put a bit of a downer for me on men, if you like, which I sit here today knowing that's an irrational thought and it's not right. You know, it's about who the person is and how they treat others. And I was in that relationship for 10 years before that became for her unworkable because I hadn't yet dealt with my past and with my abuse. That was another point, I suppose, where I sat and thought, you know, I've lost somebody I loved because of the fact I haven't dealt with what happened to me in the past. I'm asked now about my sexuality, and I have no answer there, really. I would say to you that if I'm in a relationship again in the future, I'm not at present, would it be a male or female relationship? My honest answer to that is I really don't know, because it wouldn't be the gender that would make the difference to me or make me make a choice. It would be the person, who they are inside, how they treat others, and the love that you know emanates for them. So I don't know. That is a question I've been asked many times. It's one I'll always answer because I'm quite open within my website. There's a piece on there about that too, as there is about everything we talk about. And I had a loving relationship for 10 years, and sadly that ended because I didn't deal with my own past, and I really wish that I had done at that point in time. But again, it's a path I've walked, and it's a path I'm supposed to walk, because I totally believe in that, and I'll continue to walk the one I'm on, because the one I'm on is to help others and to get understanding out there about all things that sort of center on abuse, because it's all about sometimes hating what you think is hurting you, which for me at that point in time was male.
Yes. I can understand that because, you know, it is a struggle, because I think we tend to label, if you will, or we tend to put a shield up against that thing that hurt us, and so we tend to group them all together. I think there was a time when, I can say there was a time when I had that problem with, I just didn't want to have anything to do with a male, period. You know, my father, like I said, died at an early age as well. And then my mother didn't never remarry, but she had relationships here and there. None of those people, they treated me for the daughter that I was or the child that I was, and I appreciated that. My mother was very protective, and she knew where her child was at all times, but my mother went on to die at an early age as well. So I got tossed to, you know, North Carolina and with my grandparents, and I think that's when the shift came. And though I had a beautiful relationship with my grandfather, I understood what, you know, a healthy relationship looked like, and I was perhaps a little older than you, so I had some foundation. But then things, like I said, things just kind of turned sour. So for a long time, my friends began to get worried because they never heard me talk to a male or even mention one. And I struggled for a little while with where I was with that. I eventually got married, but because of the residue, you know, of being abused and being in an abusive relationship and just, you know, going through all of that, that didn't work. And most of it was because he didn't know who he was, but here I was trying to be, you know, that spouse that I knew was the right thing, but at the same time struggling because all I could see was this person was going to hurt me, and he did. And then that just made it worse, and it was just a railroad effect. Looking now, he understands, you know, where the problem lie, and I have gone on to forgive him. But I've gotten so content, and I understand what my mission and my passion is, and that is to go back and help others. You know, so in terms of a relationship, that I hadn't really thought about it. But I can understand when we talk about hurt and healing and residue, this is where things lead. I do have another person in the queue that may have a question or a comment if you've got time.
Yeah, I'm absolutely fine, yeah.
Sure. Caller 7437, you're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for my guest?
Hi, good evening, Prophetess Bentley. This is Apostle Robinson. I just kind of got in on the tail end of things, and I was just kind of more or less taking a stroll with your guests and your life and my life, and just kind of being able to see some of the likeness and some of the characteristics and some of the things. And I guess in essence, my going through some of what she stated and what you stated, being abused as a child, I think when you really come to grips that the healing process takes place is when you realize that you have decided that you will take the hurt and use it to receive healing so that you're able to love and to give back for you and the person in the relationship. Now, what I found so profound in my course of life and in your course of life and probably some of the other listeners is the way that you know the healing has taken place. If I could use the word an arrival time, you're at your place of destination in life, is whenever you're able to love the unlovable, even though you know that the unlovable is not giving back that love, but it is not identifying who you are. You're able to remain healed knowing that some of the people that you expected to give that back is unable to give that. I think that is, if I can use a word, just a perfect gauge, a meter, a barometer, a thermometer to let you know that a lot of the healing has taken place is when you're in a position to love and to give, when you know, when you finally accept the fact that the person that you're married to, the person that you are loving, is unable to deal with or to receive genuinely the love that you want to give, in spite of the hurt and the abuse that you went through. I think that is so profound for the giver more so than the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I say that it's more profound is because it is at that time. I know for me, I can't speak for others, but it's at that time. Even, you know, if you decide to remain married or you decide to divorce, I think that it's at that time that you really start to see and to get a revelation as to your purpose, as to why you were here, and the fact that you are alive, and that you overcome the darkness, you overcame the demons, you overcame not being, you know, what you went through. I think it's at that time that you really start to see your purpose. I can honestly say, and I can't speak for anyone else, when I finally faced the fact that the person that abused me, the person that hurt me, the person that mistreated me, it was not my fault, and that I had to live. There were six in our family. I had to live for those that did not find hope. I had to live for those that were silent. I had to live for those that were in denial. I just felt there was a need that my standing and my becoming healed and my becoming well was a gift to say, look, you can overcome this thing. There is a way out there, you know, there is hope. I think, and I'm sure I can honestly tell you that at that time in my life when I started to heal and started to really say, I will encounter people who are incapable of giving back to me the love, the genuineness, the wholesome love that I'm able to give, it is at that time that I started to really know who my purpose is. How I can make a difference. It is at that time I got a revelation as to why I was born, as to why the things happen. And then God gave me a revelation as to what he wanted me to do with those gifts, what he wanted me to do with the healed mind, with the healed spirit, with the healed body, with a healed personality. He was able to give me those specifics and those directions and say, this is what I want you to do. This is why you went through what you went through. And I thought, okay. So I did, and I didn't die, and I am here, and I am alive. So I know about the suicide things and the occurrence of not wanting to live and wanting to give up. I've been down that road. But I am telling you, the total healing came when I was able to give, able to love, because I believe when people go through this, they have a chance either to die, to remain suspicious, or to stop loving. And I just said, you know, within me is the ability to embrace peace, to embrace some love, to embrace some contentment. It's there. That's what kept me fighting. So I've never stopped loving. I've never stopped giving. I wake up in the morning, and when I meet people, and, you know, I believe that not loving what people do if it's a bad thing, not loving bad behavior, not talking about that. I'm talking about the ability to love and to know that people have ways that are just so dark, they're just so mean and just madness. They're strife driven, and to be able to get up with the confidence and say, today I will determine what will make me happy. Today I'll determine how I'm going to deal with certain things, and I'm not going to go out suspicious and looking over my back and just kind of with the door and a gauge up saying, you know, I don't really think that I can, or maybe I should be suspicious of everyone. And I'm not telling you that I was always that way. I'm telling you that I went through the process of suspiciousness, and I went through the process of saying, well, you know, this has been done to me, then there's nobody that can love me. There's nobody that I can love and then receive. But after I got past that point of saying, I'm going to live victoriously, then I got a revelation as to why I was here and how I'm to make a difference and how I'm to help and what people I'm to help on this journey. I received my purpose. I really was going through life, just going through the motions, just going through wanting to please people and wanting to, and the shame and the things that come with all of that. And finally, after just healing, I get direction on to why I'm here, why I was born, my purpose, and what I'm to do. And you know something? It gave me such a peace and such a power. It is absolutely priceless. So today, when I meet people, the shame of where I've been and the shame of how I was treated, that residue was no longer there. The shame of having a dysfunctional family and so forth, that residue is no longer there. It does not define me. What defines me and my purpose is what I do after I've gone through the process of healing to reclaim what I lost, and that's the ability to love and the ability to make a difference. So I'm still without all the details of why, but now I know who I am, why I'm here, and what I'm to do with what is left. And oh, let me tell you something. There is a joy and a peace that just comes on the inside of me, and I take that wherever I go. I meet people. And I meet people, and I can see some of the hurt. I meet children, and I don't know, there's some kind of ability to just kind of take on and see some of the hurt in their eyes and to know children. And I've met children and been in contact with children, you know. But I've just started living and started loving and started making a difference. And that might sound a little like sticking your head in the sand. But it sure beats fighting those demons of suicide and trying to be suspicious of people and unable to love and unable to smile and unable to laugh. I believe once I discovered my purpose and why I'm here and why what I'm to do and who I'm to help, it brought me more joy. It overpowered the hurt. It overpowered the pain. Because as I started to meet people and to fellowship and to go different places, I have discovered that at some point in time in our life, we all face issues. We all have some things we have to deal with, and sometimes they are so horrific. Some people give up in the middle of life. Some dying not even knowing why they were alive and why they were born. But to those of us that are alive, I believe that we hold a powerful key. And that key is to keep living, to keep loving, and to keep making a difference. Thank you.
And thank you, Apostle Robinson. Teresa, do you have a response or?
Yeah, very powerful words. It is all about love. It is all about everything you said there, because it's harder. You know, somebody said to me once when I tried to take my own life that I took the easy way out, and that's absolutely not the truth, because when you sit there with a bottle of pills in your hand and a bottle of drink and you actually swallow these pills, and at that time when I was doing it, it was like a reaction. It wasn't thought about. It was just like an automated reaction that I was just doing on like remote control. And it's not an easy way out. And it shouldn't be it shouldn't be the way at all, but, you know, never think that that's, if you get to that point where that happens, and that is the trigger point that makes you realize that you need to take back your life and that your life is important. So never think that you were, you know, taking the easy way out, because it wasn't the easy way out. It just it was a point in your life. You got to such a low point, you didn't know where to go with that. And, you know, sometimes that, you know, you have to go down that far before you can go up, is what I'm trying to say. But never feel you're a failure because you've tried to do that, because, you know, that could have been the one thing in life that made you realize that there was life to have, and there was life beyond where you were. So I never condone it, but what I'm trying to say is don't feel that you're a failure because you went down that path, because that path probably took you to the path you're now walking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And I think for me, Teresa, is that I struggled with that. That was a battle for me for years. My battle was to live. I struggled with the will to live, I should say it that way. I didn't struggle, say, with some of the other things that some other people may have had to go through. And, of course, when you deal with child abuse, you know, it takes you down different paths. And then it becomes layer upon layer upon layer, you know, when the root of the thing was because of the abuse. But my struggle from the time I was 15 was the will to live. I just didn't have the – I just thought there just can't be anything better than this. Because I couldn't see – my way out. I couldn't see that light at the end of the tunnel. And so before I even graduated from high school, you know, I had already plotted and planned it how I was going to end my day. And I purposely did things and kind of mapped out some things for that day, because that was going to be the day. But someone who was caring and someone who was loving, you know, as Apostle Robinson has said, you know, that was, you know, I call it that angel that was watching over me, that teacher, you know, figured out something was just a little bit off. And I was a quiet soul in school, so it wouldn't have made any difference. And I probably, in my head, thinking nobody would have missed me. And I was in 11th grade, I believe. And it just didn't happen because someone interceded on my behalf. And that was before I even got out of high school. And then I was in college. And this time I was a little bit more successful. I managed to take that bottle of pills, you know, and it was because of a trigger, all because of a trigger. And I went I was going home from work, and it was raining that day. It was raining cats and dogs, and I was standing at the bus stop. And there was these guys that was circling the block, and I don't know what it was. I think it's because I had just gotten off the crisis line dealing with this very thing, dealing with those people who had been abused, and I really hadn't dealt with mine, and I think that's what the trigger was. I had suppressed my feelings, and everything was all right. I decided I wasn't going to talk about it. I wasn't going to think about it, and all was right. But inside, I was mad as firecrackers, mad, just mad. And it triggered something. So by the time I got home and got to my dorm, I didn't think about it. I just did it. And I fixed me a cocktail, and I took those pills. I wrote my note, and I got in the bed, and I took that trip, if you will. And I saw that bright light that you often hear people talk about. What an experience. Words cannot describe what that light looks like, other than it's almost brighter than the sun. And I remember seeing that gate, and I remember them waving me back, and I'm like, okay, no, I want to go in. And they're waving, they're like, no, you can't come in here. You're not finished yet. And I remember having to come back to my body. I remember that the light was so bright that I thought I had missed class. I thought I had overslept, missed class that day, and it was clean afternoon, like 3 o'clock, sun up, and only to come to find out it was only 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. It was pitch black outside. Talk about a sick child. I was sick as a dog, but it was an out of body experience not like taking a trip or what we call separating ourselves. I used to do that as a coping mechanism, but this was just so totally different. And at that point, I realized I needed help, and I needed to deal with it because I knew that I was on a destructive path. And then after I got married and trying to do exactly what Apostle Robinson was just talking about, trying to love, you know, and love hard, and giving it all I had, you know, doing it the right way, if you will, and not receiving what I was getting. You know, everything that I tried just was not working. And after just dealing with all of that and you know, using up all this energy to pretend like everything is okay, using those, you know, reaching back, using those coping mechanisms, I was just tired. And after he decided that, or I should say, I decided that it just wasn't, I wasn't going to just put up with that much energy anymore. Plus, I had children at that point, and I was, my children became a danger, was in danger. And I'm like, okay, I will go to jail before I let you hurt my little ones. So after just being able to clear my mind of dealing with that and having that experience of having to deal with all the hurt on top of hurt on top of hurt, here I am again struggling, and I remember it's just such a battle in your mind, struggling with the will to live. And after a while, I just realized that was that demon that just held me down, that held me captive, and I had to realize, okay, this is a stronghold, and somehow or another, I need freedom from this. And I began to make up in my mind, even though, I will say this, I did toil with that thing. But the struggle was simply whether I would go by myself or whether I was taking my babies with me. I would get up at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, get in my car, and drive, looking for a mountain, a cliff, or an excuse to say, you know, I rode off the road, I fell in, there was no bridge for me to go over, and I would drive almost to the Virginia line, leaving my babies at home, in the bed, sleeping peacefully. And after a while, I realized that there was no reward. Like you said, there's just no reward for that. And I think the light bulb came on, and I'm like, if I do this, then I am repeating the same cycle I just came out of, being raised without parents, you know, by the time I was 9. And who's going to raise my children? Certainly didn't want to leave that responsibility to anyone else. And so, you know, just like you were talking about your grandson, it was that moment that I realized I can't do this. And then I realized that was a stronghold, and I realized that I needed help with that stronghold of my mind and the will to live. And once I decided and rose up to the occasion and decided that was not going to be a stronghold anymore, then I didn't ever do that thing again. And just deciding that, okay, you know what, I'm not going to make that decision to hate and to run around and just be full of anger and die early from within because I didn't know how to love. I decided I was going to, against all odds, do the very opposite thing that, you know, and I'll say it, the enemy wanted me to. And I decided I was just going to, against all odds, I was going to conquer this thing, and I was going to walk in victory, and all those things that people said I couldn't do and wouldn't do, and, you know, all those things that they predicted that was negative in my life, I got so mad that I decided, you know what, against all odds, I'm going to win, and I'm going to be wrong. And that is why I'm here. That is why I have you here, Teresa, on. That's why, you know, Apostle Robinson is here. You know, we decided that, you know, it was love that, you know, there was a reason why we had to go through the things that we go through, so we can help someone else that doesn't know how to conquer this thing, that don't know how to use the tools, don't know how to win, don't know how to survive. And that's what you're here for, and that's why I have you here. And I thank you so much for sharing. I thank you for being an open book to my listening audience. I thank you for just being open. And I actually, be honest with you, I really thank you for just reaching out to me, because I tell my listeners all the time, if you would like to be a guest on the show, if you've got something to share, if you don't mind being under the microscope, if you will, if you don't mind sharing and being transparent, please contact me. And I certainly will, again, give the listening audience your email address, I mean your website, www.teresajoyce.com. That's www.teresajoyce.com. And if you go
also
there...
Also give them my email address too. Give them the email address. You know, I'm all the way over in England, and you know, I'm sitting here and I've got this warm feeling inside of me. We're thousands and thousands of miles apart, but we're reaching out and we're touching each other through common cause. You know, it's quite powerful. But my email address is very different from that. It's teresajoyce.joyce@gmail.com. Anyone who wants to email me there, I will email you back, and I will sort of, we can have this one-to-one thing on our own. So please do so. Please feel free to do so.
Yes. Give that address again, email address.
It's teresajoyce.joyce@gmail.com.
And also the title of the book.
The book is called There's a Fine Line.
Okay. And so if you are wanting to purchase this book, please make sure you get in touch with Teresa, and she will do what she needs to do in order to make sure that you get that book. Leave your address, your phone number, and she will be in touch with you. Thank each and every one of you for listening this evening. And I certainly have enjoyed you, Teresa, this evening. And I thank you so much for reaching out and sharing your story, as I have said before. And if there's anything that I can do to assist you in getting the word out, getting the book information out as well, and if you... I certainly don't mind putting that information on my website, and they can go to my website as well to get your book. So if there's anything that, you know, I can do to assist you, please, please, please don't hesitate to ask. Contact me. Certainly we'll have you back in the future. As you know, April is... domestic violence, sexual assault, sexual violence month, and we have some exciting things that we are getting ready to do coming up here in the coming months. Next month, we have Take Back the Night, which is a local annual event that happens not only in the state of North Carolina, on North Carolina State University's campus, but usually all of the campuses across the country have what they call a Take Back the Night, which honors the survivors of domestic violence, of sexual assault, sexual violence. And I will be live, airing live with that, along with the local television stations, and I will be announcing more details in the coming weeks, because this event takes place March the 28th, and it will be live out on the scene with the survivors. They are working behind the scenes for me, getting me microphones and headsets and things of that nature. So we're going to be looking forward to that as well. And again, Teresa, I thank you for joining me. Do you have anything else you want to say before we close?
Well, before we close, thank you very much for your offer of help there. You know, anything that helps me get my word out is absolutely positive. If you ever want me back on the show once, twice, five times, my passion is reaching out to others, is to, you know, fulfilling a need in them that I was so long was being waned in me that I never had that. I had that empty feeling. My aim, my passion now is to fulfill others, to let them realize and let them know that within them, It's all there, you know. It's just suppressed. All the love just needs rekindling, you know. It's there. You can become that whole person again. Really, just believe in yourself. Reach out. go to kindred souls, you know, join hands across the world, and we will make a difference. The power of more, the power of one is infinite if you know the right power, but the power of more than one is indefinite. We can really make a difference.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. I really believe that. And I thank you so much. And
you're very welcome.
And yes, yes, yes. Okay, so that concludes the broadcast for this evening. And like I said, don't hesitate to reach out and contact me if you need to. If you have anything, if you have a book or a signing or anything like that, or if you have, if you just want me to get the word out in reference to the book or anything that you have going on in your area and you would like to share and you would like for me to announce, I don't mind doing that. Just email me. You have my email address. And as my closing statement, as I always say, we've all had experiences against all odds. We stand before you today walking in total victory. You too can overcome all odds against you. So, again, tune in again next week, February the 27th, so you can begin to understand and gain the physical and emotional challenges you are facing for yourself and or your loved ones, your friends, your neighbors, your classmates, your coworkers. Together, we can learn powerful strategic weapons to combat the seemingly insurmountable obstacles that life can bring and begin the process of healing and forgiveness. My email address, again, is odds_against@yahoo.com. And you may email me if you desire to be on the show. Please email me, and I will certainly respond. Just simply put on the subject line VAAO. You may leave a message in my confidential voicemail box. And the number is 641-715-3900. Access code is 343-658-POUND. Again, that's 641-715-3900. Access code is 343-658-POUND. You may leave a message, extensive message, up to an hour. If you need more than that, you can call me back and continue your message from there. And lastly, you may visit my website at www.oddsagainstyou.webs.com and simply go to the Contact Us tab, leave your comment, concern, and I will respond accordingly. I thank each and every one of you this evening for listening and joining me, those who have had a question or concern and a comment. I thank Apostle Shirley Robinson and my first caller as well. And I think you said you wanted me to give the other caller your contact information, Teresa, and I will certainly do just that. So thank you so much. And at this time, we're going to be signing off with some music. Thank you.
Thank you.
You did not wait for me to draw nigh to you, but you clothed yourself in frail humanity. You did not wait for me to cry out to you, but you let me hear your voice calling me. did not wait for me. But you clothe yourself in frail humanity. You did not wait for me to cry out to you, but you let me hear your voice calling me.
Everybody for listening. Good night.